We're holding on page 64 in Rava Metzia, Ois Lamed Dalet. We learned yesterday how we were learning the last few days all about Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon, and then we learned yesterday how his son, Rav Elazar's son Yossi, had gone off the derech, and Rebbe found him and sent him to his uncle, who brought him back on the derech and made him into a big Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik, and would even almost have been worthy of being buried together with his father and grandfather, except that he wasn't in the Ma'ara with them. So now the Gemara tells a similar story also, where Rebbe found the descendant of a Tana from an earlier generation and then brought him back to Yiddishkeit. The Gemara says, Ikla Rebbe l'astre de Reb Taufin. One time, Rebbe visited the town where Reb Taufin had lived. And he asked them, the Gemara mentions in a number of places that Reb Taufin lived in Lud. So Rebbe one time visited that town. Amalahu, and he asked them, Yeshle ben la'osit tzadik. Does that tzaddik have any sons? Shehoyim kapeach has bonov. Reb Taufin used to regularly be mekapeach his children. Mekapeach literally means cut off. We find in a number of places in Shas where Reb Taufin would say an expression when he was told a halacha that seems to be obviously wrong or something like that. He would say, akapeach has bonai. He would say, may I cut off my children? That this halacha is obviously, would be like a lashon of a shvua. This halacha, the way it's been taught, is obviously wrong, has obviously been stated wrongly. See, that was an expression of his. So now Rebbe is saying, like he used to always say that about his children, may my children be cut off, Rahman al-Tzman. So now, does he in fact have any descendants? Omru loy, so they told him, ben en loy, Reb Taufin didn't leave any sons, bas yeshloy. Ben en loy, ben bas yeshloy. He had a daughter, and she left a son. And again, this son is unfortunately completely off the derech, because zoynish and iskeres v'shnayim sechavte v'dalad o v'ches. Like with Reb Elazar's son, any zoyna who usually gets a double fee, two zuzim as opposed to one, hires him for four or even for double that for eight because of how handsome he is. Asyula kame, so they brought this boy, this young man, Reb Taufin's grandson, in front of Rebbe. Amalei, so Rebbe gives him an offer. If you do tshuva, yahiv nalach bratoi, I will give you my daughter as a kala. Hoderbe, well, the guy did tshuva. Ikadami nosver gersha. One version is, now what happened after that? One version is he did end up marrying Rebbe's daughter, but then he divorced her. Because in other words, like the, it didn't, so it shouldn't be basically, like it shouldn't be, shouldn't people shouldn't think that he did tshuva only in order to marry her. And others say he didn't even marry her. He didn't even marry her at all for the same reason. So people don't say that he did tshuva in order to marry her. Now Tosfos earlier pointed out that when we have the story of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan made a very similar offer to Reish Lakish. He told him, if you do tshuva and leave your way of being a bandit chief, then you can marry my sister. And we don't find that there was any problem with that. But we said Reish Lakish married her, and they had a long life together. Later on, we said when Reish Lakish was sick after the whole kapeda of Rabbi Yochanan, then that very same sister, who was still alive and still married to Reish Lakish, went to plead with Rabbi Yochanan to save Reish Lakish's life. So why over there did Reish Lakish not worry about this factor, and now we're saying this grandson of Reb Taufin did? So Tosfos just asked the question and left it open and didn't answer. Tosfos just said that there evidently is a difference, but Tosfos didn't elaborate what the actual difference is. So some of Foshim talk about a couple of possibilities. One of them being because in this case, this boy, we said, had been very much into Znus. So now there's much more of a reason to think that people are going to say, you know what, he only did tshuva because he wanted to marry this girl. Because after all, that was his whole life beforehand was involving Tivus with women. Whereas with Reish Lakish, we don't specifically find that.
We do.
No, we don't. Where do we find that?
Where he said,
"If you, he said, Chanoshi, that's all. He said, "You're shufra chanoshi. Your beauty is the kind that's appropriate for women, or that should be used for women." We don't find that he himself was that much into that kind of thing. Like this boy who was involved with the Zoinus all the years. That's one point. Another point Mefoshim make is that after all, over there it was one on one. You have Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan over there by the Yaudin. We don't find anybody else being involved here when Rebbe gave this offer to the grandson of Reb Taufin. Apparently there were other people around, so there's more of a reason that people are going to think that that's taka why he did tshuva. You find, by the way, closer to our times, you find such things as well. I remember once reading a story of a Jewish girl, I think in South Africa or something, who unfortunately was involved with a guy. To make a long story short, a rav, a shliach, whatever, managed to convince her. You know what? At least let's see. Maybe the guy is a candidate for Geirus, I think, or something. I don't remember the exact plot of the story. To make a long story short, the guy started learning and eventually found, you know what? He does have a Yiddish neshama, and he became a geir. The upshot is that do you want to be read the shidduch with this girl? After all, the one that started the whole thing. He says basically not. Why would I want to marry a girl who was willing to marry a guy? So here it's not exactly the same thing, but it's still, you know, yeah.
I don't know, sorry. Maybe because the Yehuda was so wealthy, so he was thinking now, they think that I married her so I can
join in as well. Maybe. That's possible. That's very possible, I guess. Yeah, the Shul Zoo, maybe specifically for this one who was Rebbe's daughter, yeah, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
Good. So the Gemara says, V'lomalei kolei hai. Why is Rebbe going to such extremes to go and try to find other people's children and see if he can return them to Torah? So the answer is because there is a special schus involved in that. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Rab, the Amri La Amr of Chiva Abba Amr of Yechanan, the Amri La Amr of Shmuel Manachmeni, Amr of Yonason, call him a Lamedus Ben Chaveira Torah, a person who teaches somebody else's child Torah, Zoichav Yoshebi Yeshiva Shomaila. The teacher will now have the schus to sit in the Yeshiva Shomaila, in the schus of the fact that he taught somebody else's son. So meaning in other words, it's midah keneged midah, Maharal Shor explains. He taught somebody else Torah and caused that now he sits in the yeshiva. So now he himself is zoicha to sit in the yeshiva shomayla. So that's in general. A person teaches somebody else's child Torah, then he has that schus that he himself deserves a place in the yeshiva shomayla. And then on top of that, so for that reason alone, Rebbe should go and see if these tzaddikim had children or grandchildren. And then on top of that, Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hashem says to the Novi Yirmiya, Im Toshu, if you get the Jewish people to do tshuva with your teichachas, with your nevuos, v'ashivcha, then I will restore you to me, l'fonai tamod, and you will stand before me, Hashem says. So therefore you'll stand before me, meaning you'll be in the yeshiva shamayla. And continues the drasha. V'cholam alamed is ben ama oretz Torah. If a person then on top of that, the person he teaches is not stam ben chaveret, but ben ama oretz. His father was an ama oretz, and he teaches him Torah. Then afilu hakadosh baruch hu gozer gzeira mevatla b'shvila. Then he has an even higher schus that even if Hashem made a gzeira, Hashem will cancel it in the schus of this person who taught the ben ama oretz Torah. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, as the pasuk continues, v'im tot, the same pasuk in Yirmiyah, v'im totzi yofro mizolo, if you will take out something precious from something degraded, in this case, a tamid chacham, from an amaretz, kifi siya, you will be like my mouth, Hashem says, meaning in other words, my mouth will say a gzera, but you will be on the same level as my mouth to be able to be vatal that gzera. And the point of it is, that here you have, the person teaches a ben ama oretz, he's going beyond teva even. The derech ha-teva, according to the gzera of the way the Eibishter usually runs the world, the son would be like his father. His father was an ama oretz, and he would also. Meanwhile, now a person goes and learns with him, and then gets him back on the right path, then he's mevatel that gzera. Therefore, he's zoicha. Then in the future, the Eibishter will be mevatel gzeras because of his chus. Meforshim say, even, it's like this, you have as it is, we say, tzadik goes to v'akadosh baruch ha-makayim. But here it's even more than that. He doesn't even need to be gozer. He may not even know that there's a gzera going on. And automatically the Eibishter will cancel it in his chus. And again, because one point is because he's, as Maharshal says, because he's going against the Teva, the Rif over here says a similar point that he was able to be mevatel that gzera, and therefore he's able to be mevatel gzeras. Another point in it is also, Ben Yehoyada makes a point of it also. The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, we'll get to it in a few weeks, Be'ez Hashem, that kol peronos shabal la'olam, whenever there's disasters and troubles from Min HaShemayim that come from the world, that come to the world, it's because of Amei Aretz. Well then, if this guy is preventing now there are going to be fewer Amei Aretz, because he took the son of an Amei Aretz and made him a Tamid Chacham, then therefore he's making there'll be less peronos in the world. So therefore, he's able to be mevatel. Just imagine what all the shluchim then, all the organizations, yeah, that the, yeah, yeah, that's what we're saying over here. So they have been, yeah. So it's all, yeah. There's this tremendous shluchim involved over here, yeah. One point is also where some of the Mephoshim make a point. You know, with each, you really have both halves of this happen with what Rebbe is doing over here. Because when you get down to it, the first story involving Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar himself was a great Talmid Chacham. So therefore, he's teaching Ben Chaveira, his son had gone off the derech, but his father, after all, had been a Talmid Chacham. Mashenkin, this grandson of Rabbi Tarfon, Lav Davka, that his father was any great sheikh. Okay, he's married to Rabbi Tarfon's daughter. He can't have been Stam a nobody, but he wasn't necessarily any great person either. And therefore, by him, you can say more that the son is the son of an Amma Oretz, and therefore that Rebbe has that schus as well for bringing him back. So the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, the Gemara tells a story also involving Rebbe, actually, that there was a gzeira on the community, and then it was once all the Amei Oretz left town, the gzeira was nismatel, and Rebbe said, you see that the gzeira came in the first place only because of the Amei Oretz. We'll get to it in a few weeks, Pastor Shem, at the beginning of Bava Basra. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Amar Rav Parnach, Amar Rav Yonis, Amar Rav Yechanan, Kol Shehu Tamid Chacham Uvnoi Tamid Chacham Uven Benoi Tamid Chacham, a person who he himself and his son and his grandson are Tamid Chachamim, Shuv Ein Torah Pesekes Mizari La'olam. The Torah will never stop from his descendants forever. They'll continue to be Tamid Chachamim. Now we're going to ask, don't we see, unfortunately, Maisim B'chol Yoyim, whole long generations of people who were Tamid Chachamim. We'll talk about that in a minute, but first let's go through the piece. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Vaniz those brisi oisam amar Hashem begomer." This is my covenant with them, says Hashem. Ruchi Hashalach or Dvarash Santu Ficha lo yamushu mipicha. It will not leave your mouth, or mipi zaracha, and the mouths of your children, or mipi zera zaracha, and the mouths of your children's children. Amar Hashem, says Hashem, may after bad olam. So we see that when there's you and zaracha and zera zaracha. Then me'atavad olam. So my Omar Hashem, why the extra Omar Hashem stuck in the middle of it? It starts out. Vanizos brisi oisam Omar Hashem. Why is there another Omar Hashem near the end of the pasuk? Means that Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means Hashem is saying, and me orev l'chob d'avar zeh, I will be the orev, I will be the guarantor that this is how it will be.
How does that answer the question?
So the second Omar Hashem is actually, in other words, the first one, Vanizos bris yosem Hashem, Omar Hashem, Hashem is saying, I have a general bris with the Jewish people about Torah. But when we're saying, Omar Hashem means Hashem is saying, I am an orev on this particular thing that we just said.
No,
but one time at the beginning would be in general as a bris on it, not necessarily on this specific thing. So it means in general that there's a bris that the Jewish people will not forget the Torah, but a bris for the particular person, for that you need the other Omar Hashem.
Every bris that's written has two guarantors before.
Okay, we're saying that there's a general bris with the Jewish people about the Torah. There's a bris with the Jewish people that there will be a volatility and goyal, and that the Jewish people will never forget the Torah. Where is the specific promise to the individual that if he and his son and his grandson are someone to Chachamim, for that you need the second Omar Hashem? The second Omar Hashem is that Hashem is saying, I am an Orev, this is how it will be me'atav ad olam. So my me'atav ad olam, Amar Rabbi Yomi, mekan ve'elach, HaTorah machzeres alach sanya shalah. From now on, the Torah returns to its host. In other words, once you have, this family has hosted Torah for three generations, then it continues like that. So what is this? So first of all, you have the question. Marsha says, because you might have to ask what me'atavad olam means. We know what me'atavad olam means. And what's this lotion of machzeres? So Marsha explains like this. Listen, we say in Pirkei Avos, Haskin asmucha lumed Torah. Prepare yourself to learn Torah. She'ena Yerusha loch. The Torah is not a Yerusha for you. It's not an inheritance. Don't think you're just going to come into it easily like an inheritance. That seems like a contradiction to this. What it means is, in other words, that the Talmud Chacham, what we're saying like this, Talmud Chacham, the son of a Talmud Chacham, the grandson of a Talmud Chacham, if you prepare yourself, if you're Haskin Atzmacha, you will be able to come to the level of your fathers and grandfathers and ancestors. But if you don't, then just the fact that it's a Yerusha, you will not be Mamala Mokam Avoysav. Now, what does an Orev do? The job of an Orev is that the job of an Orev, Reuven borrows money from Shimon, Shimon is not sure that Reuben is going to be able to make good on the payment. So therefore, so Levi becomes the Arev, and he'll step in case Reuben can't make the payments. So now a person himself has a responsibility to learn Torah, just like Reuben has the responsibility to pay back his debt. Hashem is the Orev that he will be able, if he puts in the effort, then Hashem is the Orev that he will be able to reach the level of his ancestors. So now becomes the question, my me'atavad olam? Isn't it the same thing with anybody? A ben ha'aretz also, if he applies himself, is going to learn Torah. So what's the me'atavad olam? So therefore, what's the greatness of a Tamar, of a person who's a third generation Tamar Chacham? The answer is that now a Torah machazeres. Machazeres doesn't just mean returns. Maharsha points out machazeres means it makes an effort. The Torah itself now puts in the effort to help him to reach the level of his ancestors. Torah machzeres, the Torah is making an effort that alachsan yishalah, this was already a hospitable family for Torah, and therefore it wants, and therefore the Torah itself wants that this should continue this way.
That's without preparation?
No, so that's what we're saying. There has to be the preparation. The same way, for example, as Reuven cannot borrow the money and then say, well, I don't have to bother paying him back. I can rely on Levi the Orev. The same way, the Ben Benoi Shal Tamar Chacham is not able to say, well, I don't have to learn Torah. I don't have to put in the effort. Hashem will do it for me. No, that's not how Arevus works. In halacha, in fact, by the way, you have the halacha is, and unlike in some goyish legal systems, in halacha, actually, you actually have that the din is that the malva does have to go to the loiva first and demand the payment from him. If the loiva can't make it, then he goes to the orev. So the same way over here, you first have to go to the grandson of the Tamar Chacham and make sure that he's putting in the effort and he's trying to become the Tamar Chacham that he should. There is a point. There is a point also, though, that the Chofetz Chaim says on it. The fact is, first of all, okay. So first of all, like this, Tosfos elsewhere points out that based on a Gemara and Ksubas, that first of all, this thing about the three generations of Tamar Chachamim is primarily only if they saw each other in their life. If they have the grandson who lived, if the grandfather lived long enough to be able to teach his own grandchild Torah, so that the three generations saw one another, then they have more of this guarantee. So the Gemara tells over there about one of the Chachamim, Rav Chanina ben Chachinoy, I think it was, that he had like that, that he had, that when he came home from many years in Yeshiva, and his son was already an accomplished Talmud Chacham, his father was still alive, and the three of them were able to talk and learning together. So that's first of all, but then the Chofetz Chaim points out, listen, in that case, all us Jewish people are descended from the others who had that. The others had 15 years learning together. So how come you don't find, unfortunately, you find many families that have fallen away from Torah? So he says, you notice the expression, HaTorah Machzeres Alachsan Yishalah. And he tells that himself, you know, we know that the Chofetz Chaim sold, he would go around selling his own Sfarim. He wrote the Chofetz Chaim, he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, and he himself would travel from place to place selling his Sfarim.
He would
go around asking people if they want to buy his Sfarim, yeah.
No one's interested.
So now he says, so sometimes I would come to a place, sometimes there was a house where every time I came there, they would welcome me and maybe they were able to buy my Sfarim, maybe not, but whatever, they would do nice Achnasas Orachim. But eventually the old generation passes away and sometimes the new generation has taken over and I'd come knock on the door and they're not interested. They don't want to open the door. So he says the same thing over here. I turn to Machzeres Alachsanya Shalah. But if the Torah knocks on the door of the Achsanya and nobody's interested, well, then, it's not necessarily going, just the fact that there were generations of Tamar Chachamim in a row is not necessarily going to help the matter.
I'm just saying that the Shluchim, the Bochim, go out and visit things.
Mm-hmm.
To get something ready, either from Shay's Talb or Mon's Fidin and Abaddon.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Say certain things. Mm-hmm. How the learning Torah, mm-hmm, is a lasting, everlasting, fulfilling thing.
Yeah,
because they're going to say a few words to these pieces.
Right. Okay. It's possible. I don't know. Yeah.
They should get ready,
right,
to tell these people.
Right.
Because
fair enough.
Otherwise, you only have temporary happiness.
Right, right.
Deep happiness.
All right. I know. What's wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Rabbi Yosef Yosef Aboin Ta'anisa. Rabbi Yosef fasted 40 fasts, Va'akriyua, and then he was read in a dream, he was read the beginning of this pasuk. Lo yamushu mipicha. The Torah will not leave your mouth. So now, like, he has a promise, min hashamayim, that the Torah, that he will not, that he will not, that he himself will not abandon the Torah. We do, by the way, find in a number of places in Shas where Rabbi Yosef, when he was old, was very sick and actually forgot his learning, and his Talmidim would have to remind him of what he had learned, or sometimes he himself would say to himself, sometimes he himself would remember what he had previously taught, and think to himself, why did I ever teach that way? That can't possibly be correct. But at least he had a promise, Minashamayim, that he won't forget the Torah altogether. Yosef Memtan Nisachrina, then he fasted another 40 fasts. Va'akriyua, and now he was read in a dream the two parts of the pasuk. Lo yamushu mipicha or mipizar acha. It won't leave your mouth or the mouths of your children. So now he has a promise, Minashamayim, that his children will also be Talmid Chachamim, will also be learning Torah. Yosef Mem or Meya Tanisachrina, then he fasted another 40 fasts, or the different gear says Meya, 100 fasts, Bakriyu, and now he was read the Pasuk, the full Pasuk, Lo Yamushu Mipicha, or Mipizar Acha, or Mipizera Zaracha, Omar, so now he said, Mikan Ve'elach, Lo Tzarichna. Now, after this, I don't have to continue fasting, now I have more of a guarantee, Torah Machzera Salachsan Yishalah, that like we said, the Torah is going to be returning to, is going to be making an effort that my descendants should follow in that way. That now he's been given the full promise, Menashemayim. Why 40 fasts? Marsha points out that, you have the Kabbalah Satora. Moshe was three times on Har Sinai, and each day for 40 days he was there. Lachem le'ochol, mayim le'shasa. So for the first two times that he and his children should be zoicha to Torah, and they shouldn't forget it, for that 40 fasts are enough, like Moshe and Har Sinai. But the third one, Marsha says, that one you need 100. Because that, to have it be the permanent thing that we're saying before, Torah Machzeres Halachsan Inshallah, takes a lot more effort. So for that, 40 fasts is not enough. For that, you would actually need, more, which is why we have 100. On the other hand, Marshal disagrees and says that in fact the correct Girsa is in fact 40 every time. There's no need for 100. Marsha points out that actually what you have is, the reason why, so why 100, if you think about it, how many weekdays are there in a year? You have 365 days in a year. If you subtract the Shabbosim and the Yom Tovim, which you're not allowed to fast on, then you have approximately 300 days. So therefore, so 100 fasts three times. So here we're saying it was 40 and 40 and 100. But the principle why 100 is necessary for the third time is because 100 times 3 equals the total number of weekdays in an entire year. Ion Yaakov says, according to the Girsa that we have in front of us, according to the Ein Yaakov's Girsa, that's 3 times 40, then it corresponds to the 3 times that Moshe was on Har Sinai, 40 days each time.
You have three separate visits of 40 days?
Yeah, because he went up on Shavuos, or the day after, whatever, to receive the Luchas, stayed there for 40 days, came down, found they had made the Egel, broke the Luchas, ground up the Egel, judged the sinners, etc., etc. Then he says, Va'ata el al Hashem, now I have to go up to Hashem to beg for forgiveness for your Avera. He went up the next day, stayed there till the end of Av, pleading with the Eibishter to forgive him. Then the Eibishter tells him, fine, I'm not going to destroy them. Go carve yourself out two more luchas and come back up and he stays there for another 40 days, to Yom Kippur, and comes down with the second luchas and the promise of Salati Kibaracha. So yeah, three times 40 days. In this connection, by the way, also one point about this matter of that we're saying that sometimes you have, there can be tak of three generations, and then after that, it doesn't necessarily continue. So again, you have that mashal of the Chofetz Chaim's, but another point, Eitz Yosef brings a similar thing from Reb Chaim Volozhiner, but anyway, another point of it is like this. We know, for example, there were many Frum families that came to America in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they themselves tried their best to keep mitzvahs, but they, many times, unfortunately, their children did not follow in their ways. And we know many times there were many parents that cried bitter tears over it, that their children are going off the derech, and they didn't have the ability to do much about it. They themselves were barely making ends meet, and they didn't have an infrastructure to, they had the hardy few who managed to keep, but many of them did not. So it's brought, I don't remember the mocker of it, but so that some Adam Gadol said on it that those tears never went to waste. It's the reason why many times their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren became the Balei Tshuva of our times, because their ancestors, they cried to the Eibishter, and it had an effect, if not on their children, then it had on their grandchildren, on their great-grandchildren, and the same thing over here. Rabbi Yosef's fasts are going to have an effect in later generations on his children as well.
Why didn't have an immediate effect?
So why it didn't have an immediate effect? Because not always is it able to, but yeah. The Gemara continues. Here's another story involving one of the Chachamim who did a lot of fasts in connection with learning. Reb Zera, he saw the Kohar de Yisrael when Reb Zera moved to Eretz Yisrael. Now we find in a number of places in Shas, Reb Zera had grown up in Bavel. He was a Talmud of Reb Yehuda over there. He was a tremendous, great Talmud Chacham in Bavel. And then he decided to move to Eretz Yisrael. So now, when he was getting ready to move to Eretz Yisrael, the first thing he did, Yosef Meir Ta'anisa, now nowadays, you know, a person wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, the first thing is they start dealing with all the bureaucracies to make sure about where they're going to live and what, and then had to get their citizenship and so on and so forth. Reb Zeta's preparations were a little different. So the first thing is Yosef Meir Ta'anisa de l'shakach Talmud Bavlo Minei. The first thing he did is he fasted 100 fasts that he should forget the Talmud Bavli. Ki heishi de l'nitra day, so that it shouldn't distract him. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says the way that one second. Let's explain.
Okay.
Rashi explains like this. We find in many places in Shas that the style, we've talked about it before in this year, the style of learning in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel were very, very different. In Bavel, they were much more combative. We find in Shas all the time, someone says something and everybody's jumping down his throat with objections and breaking in and whatever. In Eretz Yisrael, they were much more gentle with one another. They would tend to, Rashi says, they would resolve things without having to ask a lot of questions and answers. Now, of course, they asked questions and they gave answers, of course, like we had before to Shlokish and Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, the 24 questions and the 24 answers, but they weren't so jumping down each other's throats about it in Eretz Yisrael as they were in Bavel. So therefore, Sereb Zera, he doesn't need to forget the Torah, Chas V'Shalom, but he needs to forget the style of learning that they did in Bavel of this kind of thing, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, they get to it in a more calm way. There's many places in Chassidus where it talks about the same Gemara in Sanhedrin that Rashi is referring to over here that contrasts the styles in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. The same Gemara over there has an expression, "B'machshakim hoshivani z'talmud oshal Bavel," that the way of learning of Talmud Bavli is like darkness. So in Chassidus, it talks about the idea, it's Yisru na'omi techacholishach, from the darkness of all the and everything, you come out to the light of Torah. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, it was more of an Ur Yosher, it was more of a direct kind of thing. They were on a higher level, up here at Eretz Yisrael Machim and so forth, and therefore they were able to reach the truth of Torah without having to go through all of that. The Bavli is a deeper kind of learning, but nevertheless, Reb Zera considered that it would distract him. That in Eretz Yisrael, they would do their pilpul, as we find, for example, Rish Lakish was a great Baal pilpul, that same Gemara in Sanhedrin mentions, and that way they would find out the truth, as opposed to in Bavel. So here actually, Maharsha mentions an interesting point. Hold on. A generation or two before Maharsha's times, there was a great Rav in Poland named Rav Yaakov Polak. This Rav Yaakov is known to have introduced a new kind of pilpulim, that's all the people of his generation and generations after that, called chilukim. The idea was that it was more, a lot of times, it was more pilpul for the sake of pilpul, almost like to sharpen the Talmidim's brains, but not necessarily are the conclusions that they're coming from it valid al-pi Torah. So many Chachamim of that time, and then the next couple of generations, criticized that, and over time, the style of pilpul of Polish Jews changed from that. It didn't become this almost useless, it didn't become this kind of pilpul of chilukim from Rabbi Yaakov Polak, but rather it matured into a kind, for example, the Derech of Brisk and the Derech of other great yeshivas, where they're using their fartifin zichen Torah and coming up with all kinds of beautiful ways to explain, but ones that are still grounded solidly in the facts of Torah. Whereas in Yaakov Polak's times, and a generation or two after that, it wasn't so much. So Maharsha says, maybe the vote is, in Bavel, it was the same kind of thing. It was the pilpulim of chilukim, which are more like meant to show off how great I am, that I can come up with this novel idea in Torah, when it's not so solidly grounded. Because mainly each one, Maharsha goes on to say, in Bavel, each one is mainly out to slug up the other guy. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't like that. Therefore, Reb Zera wanted to forget that style of learning so that he can learn in the Ur Yosher way of Eretz Yisrael rather than this pilpul of chilukim way, this dark way of Bavel. it's true that ultimately in Bavel they come to the Torah. I mean, after all, we have Talmud Bavli is what we follow. But nevertheless, Reb Zera considered that it's not the ideal way of learning.
Like being said, very important thing. The book of his poem starts same as Torah. The more you said you have to stand on the Torah, stand means chagrin over and over and over,
yeah,
deeper and deeper. And that lasts. The other type, you just glance at it, gears up.
Well, that's true, but that's not what we're talking about right here. Both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bava, they didn't just glance at it. We're not talking about Giusa versus Iyun. We're talking about different styles within Iyun. So again, Maharsho is saying, the vote over here is that in Bavel, they were more into a type of Iyun, more like the type of pupil that was popular in the Polish yeshivas of his times, which was not necessarily so solidly grounded in the facts of Torah. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, they did a pupil, a true kind of pupil, which actually brings out the truth of the Torah. There's also a point that the Rambam writes in a letter, the Ritva brings it on Or Gemara, that another difference is, in Reb Zera's times, the Jews of Bavel were not having it so easy. The Goyim were persecuting them at various times. Meanwhile, in Eretz Yisrael, things were much calmer, even though they ruled over by the Romans, and the Romans were no friends of the Jews. But during Reb Yochanan and Reb Zera's times, things were basically quiet. Historically, in general history, the Romans were busy at that time. They kept on having emperors who were assassinated and overthrown and captured in battle and this and that, so they really didn't have much time to harass the Jews. So now, at that time then, the level of learning in Eretz Yisrael was pushed a lot better than the level of learning in Bavel. Mashenkin, the Rambam goes on to say, later on, things calmed down in Bavel, and then you had, they reached really great heights in Torah, and that's when Ravina and Ravashi composed the Gemara as we have it, and so forth. But meanwhile, in Reb Zera's times, 100, 150 years before that, it had been different. Okay, I don't know what you're getting at with Iyun. Both of them are doing Iyun. Both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, there was Iyun. Nobody's talking about doing only Girsim. Okay, Talmud Yerushalmi involves Iyun. Okay, why don't you go and learn Talmud Yerushalmi and then get back to us. Talmud Yerushalmi does involve Iyun. It's a different kind of Iyun than in Talmud Bavli. Yeah. Okay. So, Reb Zera fasted then 100 fasts in order to forget the style of learning of the Bavli, so that he could learn in the style of the Iyun of the Yerushalmi with the proper kind of pupil. Next, Yosef Meir Tamni Sachra Naisa, then he fasted another 100 fasts, D'lo Lishkuv Reb Elazar B'Shnei, that Reb Elazar should not pass away while he, Reb Zera, is still alive, V'Nachman Alei Milo D'Tzibura, because then the matters of the Tzibur, leading the Tzibur in Eretz Yisrael, would fall on him, Reb Zera. Reb Zera knew what his caliber is. He knew that he's worthy of being the great Rosh Hashiva and the great Osef Petzolcha Tzibur in Eretz Yisrael. Right now, Reb Elazar has that job. But if Reb Elazar passes away, that job is going to fall to Reb Zera. So he fasted 100 fasts that shouldn't happen. Then, V'yosef Meir Achrini, then he fasted yet another 100 fasts, D'lenishlet Be'nurad Gehenim, that the fire of Gehenim should not have any control over him, over Reb Zera. So as it is, Iyun Yaakov points out, I mean, as it is, we say that even Poshi Yisrael, the fire of Gehenim is not dominating them. But nevertheless, Reb Zera himself didn't necessarily agree with that. And therefore, he needs to make sure, he's a great honor, but he needs to make sure that he's not going to be susceptible to Gehenim. So what did he do after he fasted those 100 fasts? Kol tlosin yomin have a bodik nafshe. Every 30 days he would test himself. He would try it out. Shogar tanura, he would fire up an oven. Solik v'yosib gabe, and he would go up and sit in the oven. V'loi have a shalte v'nura, and sure enough, the fire would have no control over him, showing that in fact, just like in this world, he's not subject to the gashmiistic fire. The same way the Gemara says elsewhere, the fire of our fire that we're familiar with is only 1/60th of the fire of Gehenim. So if he's not susceptible to our fire, then he's not susceptible to the fire of Gehenim either. However, Yom Echad Yavu Be Rabbanan Eina, one time the Chachamim looked at him and like accidentally gave him an Ayin Hara, or Ben Yoyav, it doesn't even mean they gave him an Ayin Hara, but just the very fact that they looked at him had an effect. V'ichalchu Shokei, his legs got burnt. From then on, V'korulei K'tina Chorich Shokei, from then on, there was a nickname for him, the short one whose legs were burnt. We find in the word the name Zera itself actually means small. It's short for the word Ze'era, and in fact, in the Yerushalmi, Reb Zera of our sugya and of other places in Shas is usually called Reb Ze'era, because Ze'era literally means small. So he was a physically small, short person, and now his legs had been burnt. So we find the Gemara in Brochus where Rabbi Bohu, who was one of his Chaverim, calls him by this nickname, Ketina Chorich Shoke. We find the Gemara in Sanhedrin where there were some Biryonim, some Chutzpan Yaks in town, who also called him that. So that became a nickname of his because of that. This was after he had done the fast. So he had fasted. He found himself to be immune to the fire of Gehenna, but one time it had this limited effect on him. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola, Chafal of Kislev. Continuing on the topic, yesterday's piece had been a part of a sicha where the Rebbe had talked about the idea that the geula of Yutus Kislev is a major stage in Afotas Amayonis Chutzah because which in turn brings Dom Malka Mashicha. So now, continuing on that topic, on a deeper level, thinking of the Alter Rebbe's geula on Yutus Kislev, again, Yafutsu Manasecha Chutzah is not just brings about Mashiach, but it is the toichen of what Mashiach coming and the Geula of the Shechina and the Geula of the Jewish people is all about. Because what is the toichen of Afotas Amayonis Chutzah? Is to spread knowledge of Elokus in the world. So the more there's revealed knowledge of Elokus in the world, the more closer we get to the time of Yemos Mashiach, when as the Rambam says, Lo Yeh Esa Kol Olam El Ladas Hashem Bilvad, that everybody's occupation will be exclusively to know Hashem. So it's not just it brings to it, but it's that is the same toichen. As the pasuk says, Ki mola odeyas Hashem kamayim layom machasim. So that means, in other words, the world will not conceal Elokus, which nowadays it does, which is what we mean by golus hashchina. The shchina is in golus, in the klippus. But now, in the future, it won't be. Adrabah, the world will be completely covered with deyas Hashem, and that's, in other words, there'll be the complete shlemus of the geula of the shchina. And then we Jewish people, all the more so, as the Rambam says, will be chachamim gdolim and know the hidden things and understand the das of the Eivishter as much as a person is able to, meaning that we'll have the ultimate closeness to the Eivishter, which goes back to the pasuk mikrov li, that I was in a hand-to-hand close combat, and nevertheless, hoyu imadi, the Rabbim were with me, and that brings about that now we have the ultimate, instead of closeness with the enemy and having to grapple with him, instead we have the ultimate closeness to the Eivishter. Continuing with Hilchos Hashkamos HaBoker, where we were talking about the things that a person should say about the various psukim and parashiyos of korbanos that a person should say. So those parashiyos of korbanos a person should say only by day, because you don't bring korbanos at night. But the parasha, now in some sidurim, they have the parasha of the kiyur. Again, the Alter Rebbe did not put it in the sidur, but in some sidurim they have the section about the kiyur that the kohenim would wash their hands and feet from. And then there's a parasha of Trumas Hadeshen, which that the Alter Rebbe did put in the Siddur. So those things were done by night. The Trumas Hadeshen was generally done a little bit before or after Alos HaShachar, and sometimes even earlier. It was a couple of days ago, and Daf Hayomi mentioned that point. And the Kiyo as well. The Kohen had to wash his hands and feet from the Kiyo before doing the Trumas Hadeshen. So those things a person can say before Ur Hayom, before dawn, because those avoid, because the corresponding avoidus were indeed done at night. Now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that the parasha of Korbanos should be said standing. However, in Madre Rabastra, the Alter Rebbe had said that's not necessary. In Lamaisa, we don't see people stand for it. The same thing, Mizmor L'Soda should also to stand for the parasha of Korbanos. We don't specifically stand when we say the parasha of the Talmud and so forth, even though it is true the Avodah was done standing, but it's not, the fact is, we're not doing the actual Avodah. It's only on the Shama Parim Sfasenu. It's only to be considered as though we had done the Avodah, so therefore we don't have to stand for it. Person wants to stand for it, who's not to hate, but so here in Madura Kama, the Alter Rebbe says that he should, but in Madura Basra, the Alter Rebbe had said it's not necessary to do that. That's the Alter Rebbe had said, because after all, you yourself are not a Kohen who's doing the Avodah, it's only considered as though the Kohen did it for you, so therefore you don't have to say it standing. Now, the same thing, Mizmor B'Soda should also be said standing. And this one, we don't have anything that the Alter Rebbe says differently, so that taka we do. We say Mizmor B'Soda standing the same way as the offering of an actual Korban Torah was done standing. Now, when you finish saying the parasha of the Ola, then you say Yehi Rotzon Milfanecha, that is, it should be considered by you that as if I brought an oila, and the same thing after the parashiyos of each of the other ones, because in Mincha, Shlomim, and Toda, because those can come. But Nidava, even if a person is not chayiv in them, you can still bring them voluntarily any time he wants. That, now again, the Alter Rebbe did not put that in. He just put in the general Ribbono Shel Olam that we say after the parasha, after the whole, after describing all the korbanos. Now the Alter Rebbe goes on to say here that if a that after the chatas and the osham and the osham vade and the toli and the korban olav yored, if a person is saying those sections, he should not say after them yehirotzen, that it should be considered as though I brought that korban, because what if he wasn't chayiv from in them, and then it would be like bringing chulin bazara. However, a person can say after the parasha of Oshem Vade Vitoloi, he can say, if I was required to bring an Oshem Vade Vitoloi, then it should be considered as though I brought it. So now, if it wasn't chayev in it, then it's not considered bringing the korban at all, and it's just like reading psukim. But after the parasha of Chatzos, though, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, then he shouldn't say anything at all. Because it's one thing in Oshem. If a person doesn't know whether he did. With an Osham Toloi, by definition, the person doesn't know whether he did the Aveira. But with a Chatas, if he doesn't know that he did it, he can't bring the Korban, because then it wouldn't be a Kapara for him, because it has to be, to begin with, that he knows that he did the Aveira. So therefore, so now, if he's saying the Parasha of Chatas, and then afterwards it says, if I was Chayev a Chatas, then this should be counted as a Chatas, then it would be contradictory. Because what do you mean, if I was Chayev, if you don't know whether you're Chayev, you're not bringing a Chatas in the first place. Yes, no, again, to say that that a person should say it, because maybe he knew that he had done the Aveda and then forgot. Again, as the Alter Rebbe, again, in Madrid Abbasra, the Alter Rebbe doesn't mention all of that, and the Maisa, the Alter Rebbe did not put all that into the Siddur. So we don't actually say those psukim, we say in general about the Korbanos, and then we have Ezrim Korban, which summarizes all of them.
Okay.